Hey, Steve here. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Today is episode 19, Dr. Tim Elmore and Growing Leaders. I think you'll really enjoy this show. By the way, don't forget that we'd love to have you subscribe to the program, download us, share us with friends, and also go to iTunes and leave us a star rating. No matter what, I appreciate you listening. Thanks again, and enjoy.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey everyone, this is Steve Mileto back again with another episode of Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. And just today we've got with us Dr. Tim Elmore, founder and president of Growing Leaders. Hey Tim, say hi to everybody.
Hey, good to be with you, Steve.
Appreciate you taking time with me today. And Tim, I can't thank you enough for talking with me. How about we start with you talking about your background and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I lead a nonprofit organization called Growing Leaders. And it was birthed in 2003, really on the heels of working over two decades with Dr. John Maxwell. Some listeners may know John's name. John is a New York Times bestselling author in leadership. And all the while I was working with him, helping him do books and do events, and he was teaching corporate leaders, I was thinking, oh my goodness, we got to get this to the schools and to the kids. So Growing Leaders was really birthed out of the desire to take basic fundamental life skills and leadership skills and take it to the kids when they're still being formed and shaped in school.
Oh, excellent. I did not realize you had that connection with John Maxwell. I love that. I'm a big fan of his. Let's go ahead and delve into, I've heard you speak before at the Georgia Association of Educational Leaders a couple years ago, and then I had the opportunity at a program recently called the Super Summit. And on that day, your topic, the group was primarily educators, I believe, and your topic was marching off the map. And something you said during this talk was, we're afraid to march into new territory. And I was just wondering if you could talk about that in relation to schools.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just with a whole bunch of teachers and educators yesterday, and I said this very same thing. You all are part of a system, and it's not a bad system, but it's definitely a system that was designed 100 years ago for a different world. And yet we're in this system. We can't revolutionize it, especially if we're a teacher in a classroom. We're not going to dramatically change the school overnight. On top of that, so many teachers, Steve, feel like that there's something, you know, something added every year just on top of the already busy schedule. And so it puts us in maintenance mode, almost survival mode, if you will. And while some teachers, many teachers, still love their work with kids, they feel like they're victims of a system that keeps them from perhaps living on the edge or trying new things or being those pioneers. Remember the day of the Super Summit, I talked about settlers and pioneers.
Yes.
Most of us are settlers. We're only going to do it if it's safe, if it's been tried and proven, and we're afraid to perhaps go out on the limb and try something new that our kids desperately need us to.
Yeah, I like that image, by the way, because pioneers and settlers, as a former history teacher myself, I taught U.S. history and world history for 9 years, and it's like I love that image as I was soaking up your discussion of this. And I think the pioneer setting out looking towards the new world and then the settler wanting to stay put, that just creates an awesome image there.
Well, it does, and I think I even joked the day we were together that the pioneer is often recognized by the arrows in his back. You know, sometimes when we lead the way, there's a whole bunch of people that don't like you doing that different thing, and for some reason they're firing at us. And so I think it's time for us to say, even if we're in a system that's less than perfect, how do we take the classroom or the school we do have influence over and try some new things that may just connect with these kids?
I love that. Been there with that. You're out there leading the way, and you're a little worried about those shots that might be taken at you. But at the same time, you got to keep on moving forward, because if you don't, because there's lots of reasons why people want to slow you down, and primarily just that, I think being afraid of change is a big part of it.
Yeah.
because they're comfortable with what is and what they've been doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love the comfortable and we love the familiar. I do too. That's why I have to be very intentional about saying, I'm going to do some new things here. And, you know, some of it won't work, but some of it will, and it's going to take me to a new level.
Excellent. One of the things that you've also mentioned during your presentation is that you had a talk with your son, and you asked him what he learned in school, and he said, be still and be quiet. And
yeah.
you used this to talk about how, what I wanted you to do is just kind of use this to talk about how you envision the schoolhouse at all ages, if you would.
Absolutely. Well, I'll never forget that day. Jonathan is now 21 years old, but when he was 5, he went to his, you know, first kindergarten class, and I was so excited. This was just a milestone. And I said, Jonathan, what'd you learn your first day of school? And I thought he would have something very creative to say, and it was indeed, sit still and be quiet. You know, that was a big lesson of the day. And I'm sure that the teacher didn't mean any harm in that, but I felt sad that the number one thing he came away with was not stretching or learning or whatever, it was control. It was, you know, just stay in your little confinement here. So I think what we need to do is we need to experiment as teachers, as educators, at being far more epic. And I use that term. My friend Leonard Sweet was the first person to introduce it to me. The word epic simply stands for EPIC. We need to be way more experiential. Meaning kids today are wanting experiences, not just lectures. I don't know if we ever were looking forward to lectures, but we need to create environments and experiences from which we teach a truth or a lesson. The letter P reminds me, Steve, we need to be more participatory. Think about it. Kids today have grown up in a world where they've been able to participate in the outcomes of where almost anything goes. Some of these kids have been weighing in on where the family goes on vacation since they were 5 years old.
Right.
They can hardly, you know, watch a reality TV show without voting on who stays on the show next week. So can teachers give a sense of ownership in the class by letting kids weigh in on where this course is going? Now, they're still the teacher, but boy, I tell you, students support what they help create. So that's what we're aiming for there. The letter I in epic reminds me, we need to be image rich. These kids have grown up with screens and images. And so is there a metaphor or a word picture that we could use as teachers that would better anchor what we're trying to say as the big idea? Now, certainly there's going to be a lot of didactic stuff we need to say afterwards, but boy, that image could anchor the big idea and cause them to remember and talk about it, because pictures are worth 1,000 words. And then the letter C in epic reminds me, they're connected. These kids are connected. They're connected socially as well as technologically. Yeah. So is there a way, if I have a class of 25 kids or even 20 kids, to break them up into 5 groups of 4 or 5 groups of 5 and give them a well-crafted question, one that can't be answered with yes or no, and get them engaged with each other and connected and thinking out loud? Once again, it causes them to own their education because they're creating it rather than just getting a download from up front. So anyway, that would just be one way I think we could be a little bit more pioneer rather than settler by being more epic in our schools.
I love that, and that's going to take me into my next question, which you know, that the C in your word epic, you talked about the kids being connected. Recently, I wrote a blog post about how kids research and how they the games that they play. If you ever watch them, and what I'm talking about is whether it's a online game like League of Legends or Minecraft, or whether it's a in-house game, any number of type, you know, you fill in the blank, Xbox or Nintendo type
game. Yeah.
When they get stuck, they incorporate others. They go in and they, like for example,
yeah,
for the house-based games, one of the things that they'll do is they'll run real quick, they'll pause it, and they'll run real quick to the computer, get on YouTube, and start trying to find out who's beat this area. And when they're doing the online games, they'll incorporate friends. There's little chat boxes and stuff going on at the same time. They'll say, what do you think about this? How do we do this? And they're talking to each other. And what I wanted to do is take that into something that you said that day, and you said, kids Google. And
yeah,
I love this. Can you talk a little bit more about your thoughts about the idea that connectedness part of your word epic?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I a number of people out there that work in the field of education are beginning to say that the new meta competency, M-E-T-A, the new meta competency, is resourcefulness. Because these kids don't need us for information. This is the first generation of kids that don't need schools or parents for information. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. What they need us for is interpretation. Let me help you make sense of what you know. So they don't need us to access it, but to process it. So this resourcefulness thing has really been on my mind. How can we take this world that they're in, where it's at their fingertips, they can Google and Wikipedia or whatever and find answers, and begin to teach that the big, big competency isn't just memorization. Very few of these kids have memorized the phone numbers of their friends, but they have it on their phone. So if they can learn to be resourceful and find answers, now we've got something. Now that's going to be relevant in the career that they're going into post-high school. And in fact, I wonder, what if we began to experiment in our classrooms with open book, open test all the time, where it wasn't just, did I remember when the French Revolution was, but how, what does this have to do with, can I begin to look up and see the relevance of this for me today? That, I think, is a whole new skill set that we may need to reframe our teaching from.
I love it, because I don't know if you've ever done this in your own world, but you know, just what you're talking about and just watching kids and doing this. And one of the things that I've run into is sometimes where a class instructor doesn't want them doing this, because they have their answers that they have in mind.
Yeah.
And instead, what I think they should do is really open up, like you're saying. And just for an example, and I've experienced this myself as an adult, just trying to figure out, I don't know if you've ever heard of something called a cabin filter in your car, but cars produced in the last, I think 10 years or something like this, have this device called a cabin filter. And if you take it to the dealership, it's expensive to change. Well, I found out that if you go on YouTube and put the name of your car in cabin filter, there's all these people who show you how to do it.
And how about that? Yeah.
Talk about getting resourceful.
And cheaper, too.
Very much so. Very much so. And by the way, I'm not much of a car guy, so this is a big deal for me.
Absolutely. Me too. Same with me.
I got to tell you, you grabbed my attention and heartstrings when you discussed how we've raised young people who are risk adverse. Can you dive into that some?
Yeah, absolutely. As far as we can tell by our digging, this is the most risk averse generation of kids to date. And by that, I simply mean they are less apt to take some risks that we might have taken 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. Now, here's what my thinking is. Many of the listeners will remember that about, a couple of decades ago, the playgrounds of America began to change. Parents were afraid that the monkey bars and the jungle gyms would, our kids would fall off of them and they'll break their arm. And so we began to pull those playground pieces of equipment off the playgrounds. Well, that worked in the day. It was a good answer today. We weren't thinking about the ramifications 20 years later. For instance, when kids climb the monkey bars or jungle gyms, they might fall, but they might fall off of anything for that matter.
Yes.
The skill sets they use to climb the monkey bars are the same skill sets they will need in their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s when they're navigating risk then, when the stakes are higher, much higher than climbing the monkey bars. So what we're finding now is psychologists in America, Europe, and Australia are now interviewing these young adults who are now no longer 6 or 7 or 8 years old, but 26, 27, and 28, and they're finding that they're having phobias over normal risk-taking ventures, like moving out of a house or getting married or doing that big job interview. Well, I'm not blaming the monkey bars solely for this, but when we remove gadgets from their lives or experiences from their lives that might be risky, but the stakes are pretty low, they've not built those quote-unquote muscles when they're going to need them later and we're not around. So I think we need to say, let's not be reckless, but let's keep those risky ventures in their life when they're young, because they're going to need those skill sets much later.
That's excellent. And I know you run into that quite a bit when and I know there's a lot of research out there about this, with the idea that, if I'm smart, then should I take the risk of doing something that makes me look not smart?
Absolutely. I think we even talked, Steve, about Carol Dweck and her research in the book Mindset.
Yes.
Where they found that, you know, kids that were praised for being smart, they go, okay, I'm going to stop there. I'm not going to try anymore because I'm just going to go with smart, you know. And,
right.
And when we're really, we want them to begin to keep trying and stretching. And so we need to foster a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. And that happens only with the willingness to take a risk and try something new.
It's it really is something that adults just have to be aware of, I think, and especially in the as parents, and then also as a classroom teacher, that this is something you got to get them into the mode of wanting to take risk, which means the teacher has to be willing to take risk too, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. In fact, can I just encourage teachers listening to this, if this seems relevant to you, I think it's much wiser to affirm, I love the strategy you just used on that problem, or I love the effort you put into that. Thanks for working hard, rather than something that's more fixed, like a score, or you're smart, or you're beautiful. When we affirm variables that are in their control, kids tend to say, I'm willing to take a risk and try something new because it was about effort, not the grade. And while I understand test scores are important, sometimes test scores become an end in themselves rather than a means to an end of actually learning something. So I do think you're on something, Steve. We've got to maybe change our vocabulary in the classroom.
I like that a lot. I appreciate you delving into that.
It's
so necessary to be able to try and get them to understand, because we get caught up, you know, it's just like the idea that out there, it's easier to say, hey, that was a good job, instead of explaining really what they did well or did not do well, and get them used to the idea that you can do things better, and it is okay to stumble and fail once in a while, because we learn.
Absolutely.
We learn more from that.
And I think it's safe to say, Steve, at whatever age, I mean, elementary school, middle school, high school, what gets rewarded gets repeated. And so I need to remember, as an adult in the lives of kids, I need to say, I love how honest you are. I love how hard you worked, because that's the stuff that's in their control that they can do again and again and again. It's going to pay off great dividends as adults when they're married and have a job. And so really, you know my mantra, we've got to get these kids ready for the world that awaits them when mom and dad are no longer around, teachers no longer around. Are they really ready for the world that they're going to have to work in? So that's what I think our mantra needs to be.
I like that. I like that a lot. Let's use that to now segue into letting you talk about Growing Leaders, your organization. What's its purpose, and where did the vision come from, and how does it function?
Yeah, well, I'm honored that you talk about this. Our sole purpose at Growing Leaders is, as a nonprofit organization, is to partner with schools and other organizations where students exist, and to help them begin to build life and leadership skills in those kids. There's a term that we're using more and more these days, career ready. I think I've even used it in this conversation. We're beginning to recognize that even though we want kids to be good at reading, writing, and arithmetic, there are so many more skill sets that need to be developed that aren't necessarily being developed in the home. Now, I'm not saying it's all the school's fault. In fact, it isn't. It's often mom and dad's fault when we haven't gotten them ready. But so often, every level of school tends to get kids ready for more school rather than for real life that comes after school. And this is not a put-down or a cut-down. It's simply saying we've got to begin at some point to say we're going to get kids ready not just for the next level of school, but for life that comes later. So Growing Leaders is all about that, helping build emotional intelligence, leadership perspective, strengths and gifts, character and ethics in these kids, because they're going to need them later. And when we partner with schools, Steve, what we really try to do is bring alongside programming that can be built into the already existing day. We're not trying to add one more thing to the already crowded schedule, but think conversations and experiences and images that can happen right there in the midst of history class or math class or whatever. And we begin to have socially aware and self-aware kids that are graduating from our school systems. We just think that's a need of the hour, and we want to help schools do that well.
Excellent. So you have a team that I'm guessing that's who was helping you that day at the Super Summit and visiting your website and so forth. How big is that team?
Well, we have 12 people on our payroll, so it's not big. But then in addition to that, we have 10 communicators that go out to schools, to campuses, and help them either with teacher and faculty training. We'll talk about pedagogy. We have speakers that will go out and do assemblies for schools for the students themselves. And we'll talk about habitudes, images that leadership habits and attitudes. So we help schools do both events and process. That's the two big words we use. We want to help you do events that will catalyze some growth, but then we want to help them do the process, which is the week-by-week journey they need to take where our lives really change. So that's generally what we do in partnerships with the schools across the country. And like I said, we partner with now over 7,000 schools and organizations, just helping them do this that we've talked about really, really well.
Wow, that's awesome. That's what's kind of what I wanted you to talk about there, was to get into kind of how it actually appears in the school and how you'd end up working. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Along with this, you've written numerous books. Do you have any that are a favorite or that you'd like to talk about at this point?
That's like asking a mother who her favorite child is, you know.
Oh, come on now. You know that all moms have one favorite at least, right?
Yeah, I do. Well, probably if I were to look at all of them, and I think there's been 26 or 27 or 28 books now, the Habitudes books are the ones that have sold the most and been probably the most life-changing. As I mentioned, Habitudes is a series of books that are used right there in the class or in a small group or even in the home, for that matter, with parents. But Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. And here's how it works, Steve. Every image, every picture represents a timeless principle that we think kids need to learn. Somewhere between now and the time they're all grown up and out of the house, they need to learn this principle. And so every image represents that principle, but because it's a picture rather than some list of, you know, to-dos, it engages the kids. You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, so it starts a conversation. And so let me give you a couple of examples real quick. So one of the images is called Rivers and Floods, and it's a really cool picture of a flood that's overwhelming a house. It's kind of engaging. Well, we say rivers and floods are both bodies of water. The difference is floods are water going in every direction all at once and doing damage. Rivers are water flowing in a single direction because they have banks to them, and they can be very helpful if you use them right. We say kids, students, or faculty for that matter, it's so much easier to be a flood rather than a river. And today, most of us are flooding, not flowing. We're 5 miles wide and 1 inch deep, aren't we? You know, we're doing too many things at once. And we never really reach a real goal because we're trying to do everything. If I've said this once, I've said it a million times. Students, you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And sooner or later, you've got to learn the power of saying no if you're going to flow. Now, I know that sounds cheesy, but that starts a discussion on focus and vision and where am I going and that I can't do everything. Well, that's one of the images. And we think whatever age, whether they're 5 or 15, they need to have a conversation about don't try everything. You know, you got to decide where your river's going to flow. So anyway, all that to say, we think it starts really helpful conversations. And frankly, Steve, you and I could have a river and flood conversation. It would be relevant for us, you know, in midlife.
I think so. Yeah, I don't think they...
That would be my favorite.
I like that. I appreciate you choosing too, by the way. I know that's difficult, but, you know, I was hoping I could get you to choose one. And I do think...
Yeah. You know, authors often say, well, my favorite book is my last one, you know, the one I just did. We do have a brand new book coming out that I'm very excited about for parents. Very often, everything we've done is for schools, either the teacher or the student. But I just did a book called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. And it's really built off of the 12 most common things, I think, that we moms and dads have done unwittingly. We didn't try to make a mistake, but it's causing these kids to leave our homes unready for the life that awaits them. So I'm very, very excited about that. It's going to come out late summer this year, 2014, and I'm excited about the potential it has to help parents collaborate with schools to really raise a good kid when it's all said and done.
I look forward to seeing that. Of course, I also worry about reading it and going, huh, well, should have done that. Should have done that.
Yeah. I will say this, Steve. Every chapter begins with a story. Most of them are my mistakes that I made, so I'm telling on myself. I'm hanging out my dirty laundry on what I did that I wish I wouldn't have done.
Good stuff. I look forward to that coming out. We're getting close to wrapping up, and I got to ask you, is there anything that you'd like to share that we haven't talked about already before I get to a question about teachers that I want to ask you?
Well, I'm afraid sometimes when I do podcasts like these that I come across like a very negative person, and I'm really not. You know me, Steve. I'm very optimistic. I'm very excited about the future. But the only thing I would add is I'm excited about the potential of these kids if we, as caring adults, will rethink what we're doing with our kids. And that takes us back to that pioneer and settler.
Right.
I believe there's some new things we're going to have to try because kids today are just growing up in a different world than the one I grew up in. And so we can't keep repeating what we've always done and get better results. So I just want to encourage listeners out there, be willing to be the pioneer, be willing to try the new resource or the new idea, and know that the what may not need to change. Math is math, but the how may need to change, how we're delivering the concepts and the truths we're trying to teach. So I'm always encouraging teachers, be willing to try the new thing, because we do need new results today.
I love that. That's awesome, and I appreciate you sharing that. And just as a note, when I hear you speak, it's nothing but positive. So I hope that you do know that, because I hear just energy, and it sets my mind on fire, and the things that could be and I might be.
Good. Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'm always afraid that we're just being the naysayers, and I really do think this group of kids today may be the best generation America's ever produced, and I think they can be if we'll really get them ready, and that's going to be up to us as the caring adults in their lives.
That's awesome. I appreciate it. So I want to ask you this. I've started thinking about this recently, and what I want to ask you is, think back to when you were in school. Just want you to think, did you have a favorite teacher that you would thank if you could, and why?
Oh, absolutely. Two come to mind immediately. One was Mrs. Mayo. She was my fourth grade teacher. And, I think the fourth grade is a very significant year. Our brains are developing in unique ways, and that was a marked year for me. Mrs. Mayo was a wonderful teacher. She was, first of all, just a great teacher. She taught the subject with great passion. But I could tell she really loved every one of her students, and I felt loved very uniquely by Mrs. Mayo. So while that's not a hard skill, that's a soft skill, I think kids really perform better in the classroom when they know their teacher has a unique love for them.
Yes.
Mrs. Mayo actually had me over to the house. This was way back when teachers could actually do this and not be, this is not weird or whatever. I'd go to the house, she'd have me for dinner. I thought she did it for all the kids. And maybe she did, but I'll never forget. I was friends with her son, but I'll never forget watching TV and talking about what we learned from that television show. And she was always helping us learn something. But I loved Mrs. Mayo, and that caused me to want to do my very best for her because I knew she loved me too. So that would be one. And then Mr. Mosher was a high school teacher that I loved. He taught English. But I'll never forget, he really ventured beyond just English. English was a platform from which he could teach life. And I learned so many life skills from this man that I now use to this day. And I guess I would say, Steve, if I could go back and thank anybody, I'd go back to Mrs. Mayo. She's probably in a wheelchair now, or maybe she's even gone. I don't know. But and I'd thank Mr. Mosher and say, thank you for teaching me life, not just subjects in school that have made me the man I am today.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's it's neat to hear those thoughts
yeah.
and those ideas and the impact they both had on you at different times in your life, which still carries through, which is I appreciate you sharing that. So now as we close, where can we find you on the web and social media? And where can the audience find your books and resources?
Well, the easiest place to find us is our website, and it's simply growingleaders.com, www.growingleaders.com. And there you can find our blog page. I blog every day, Monday through Friday, and people can subscribe to it and get it once a week if they'd like to digest. They can follow us on Twitter at Tim L. Moore. That's easy enough. It's just my name.com. And but the website would have all the ways that they can connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, blogs, etc. And like you, we just want to encourage teachers and educators and coaches to really become the mentors they need to be so we can help this generation be the greatest generation that ever graduated from school in America.
Excellent. Tim, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today, and I encourage everyone to get a chance to hear you speak, as well as to check out your publications, and as well as find out more about the Growing Leaders Organization and what it can do to help help us with our children today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you again.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes Store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.